to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. Thank you for joining me here again. My name is Zachary Smith. I am your host for the NXT Podcast, and we have a great show to talk about again this week. As always, you can find me on Twitter. I am ZachNXT. That's ZachNXT on Twitter. Now, as you know, generally, we will talk about the news and notes as it pertains to the wrestling world before we do get started. And obviously, biggest news coming out this week is COVID-19 related. As you know, for the longest time, the WWE has been running Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Main Event 205 Live, and their pay-per-views with no crowd in the Performance Center. Can't have a crowd for obvious reasons, and you have to do it in the Performance Center because a lot of places weren't allowing anybody to run shows, so they had to just do it all in the Performance Center. Been doing it for a while. Recently, they started adding NXT prospects or Performance Center trainees to the crowd. They had them interspersed where the crowd would be, and they've done marathon recording sessions to get the best reactions from that crowd. Doesn't sound like a super fun job. Now, they made sure to mention on just about every show that they are practicing social distancing. However, anybody who was watching any of the shows would have known that they were not wearing masks. I imagine that's because the WWE or Vince didn't think it looked good to have people wearing masks. However, don't worry, guys, they were all tested. And of course, by tested, what we really mean is their temperatures were taken. And presumably, if you had a fever of over a certain amount, you were not going to be allowed in the building. If you were 0.1 below, you were fine. Now, as you know, one of the symptoms of COVID-19 is a fever. However, you also probably know that you don't have to have symptoms or that particular symptom in order to have the virus. So, for example, if your only precautionary measure were to be taking somebody's temperature, that might not be the most comprehensive test that you could do if you're going to have people standing pretty close together. You're stacking people together, and you're having them yell or boo right next to each other without masks, and the only thing that you have to go on is they don't have a fever. And that seemed to be working just great until this week when we found out that at least one of them has tested positive for COVID. Now, that's a problem for a couple of reasons. Number one, because you now don't know who that person was, and so you obviously can't have them at the show. But the bigger problem is that they were around a lot of other trainees. They were around the wrestlers, although they were protected by that hockey barrier. So you now have somebody who was infected with COVID in the building. And now they had to delay SmackDown tapings. They're going to have to do a marathon session where they do Raw and SmackDown just together because they now have to do them all together because it was delayed because of this positive test. That's not great. And now, if you're going to have them back in the crowd, which has added a lot to wrestling, or at least these particular shows, then you're going to have to do a full rapid COVID test on all of them. And I imagine that's not the easiest thing to procure at the moment. And so you also don't know how long that person who tested positive has been carrying. If you're carrying, you can still infect somebody else without having the symptoms, i.e. a fever. So you got a few problems there. There's some issues that you're going to have to work out with that. And so you're in a situation now where the biggest wrestling company in the world didn't take proper precautions and paid for it. Okay, so AEW has had wrestlers in the crowd for longer than WWE. They haven't had this problem because they've done testing. Impact doesn't seem to have this problem. New Japan basically shut down for a bit in response to COVID. And so you have the largest wrestling company in the world that thought it would be sufficient to just test for one of the symptoms of COVID that you don't need to have in order to have the virus. And because they did no testing for it other than if you have a fever, you now have a situation where somebody tested positive, and now the bigger problem is you don't know how many people are going to test positive because it's very contagious. You could have avoided this by having testing for all of the performance center people that were there. You could have also probably mitigated it by having them wear masks, but that wouldn't look good on TV, would it? And so now you're forced into a situation where you're going to, if you are using a crowd, have them watch multiple shows back to back. I imagine there's going to be some lack of energy there, and you're now having to adjust your taping schedule. It's a good thing the show isn't live like they wanted it to be. Otherwise, this would be a bigger problem than it already is. It's odd to me that this is a problem for the biggest wrestling company in the world. This feels like a story it would have happened to Impact or to TNA back in the day. This feels like the kind of headline that we would get from TNA back in the day when they were basically doing something wrong every couple weeks. This feels like a company that doesn't take everything into account and makes a hilarious blunder that results in a positive test when it shouldn't have. The problem is that it is not TNA. It's WWE. It's the biggest company in the world. It's a company that could certainly afford to take these precautions and just didn't. And the thing is, if this were TNA, we would be making fun of them for their incompetence, as we do sometimes with TNA, now Impact, when they make a mistake fairly or unfairly. So if we would make fun of TNA for doing it, it seems like we would have to do the same thing for WWE for incompetence. No, you cannot be 100% sure that nobody in that crowd has COVID, but what you could have done is you could have had proper testing and you could have had masks. That would have been a fairly simple thing to do. Masks don't even cost that much money. But they didn't. They TNA'd it, and now here we are. So I hope whoever tested positive is safe. I hope they stay safe, and I sincerely hope the WWE can actually get their word I can't say on a family-friendly podcast together and start taking this seriously, because it feels like they don't. And that's super weird for a company that was so financially distraught that they had to release a bunch of performers despite having their best year ever. But we're not talking about main roster stuff right now, guys. All right, shut up. We're not talking about it. We're talking about NXT right now. And today we had a great show. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about it to you. You're going to listen. If you want to talk too, then it'll be like we're talking. That's really up to you. It's kind of a choose-your-own-adventure thing. At that point, I'm not going to know the difference. So do whatever you feel in your heart. First thing we get after some recaps is Bayley and Sasha arriving to the arena earlier. They are the NXT Women's Tag Champions. It's the first time in, I believe, 5 years that they've been back in NXT. A lot of people get credit for starting the Women's Revolution and putting NXT on the map in that regard, and I think that that actually goes to Sasha and Bayley for their takeover match that was the best match on that card to a lot of people and really helped springboard this, hey, I think these women can have matches too movement in WWE. And we're actually starting with Imperium. We're starting with our tag title match. Remember, Breezango won that number one contenders title match. And so here we are. Imperium, like I said, is out first. It's Aichner and Bartel. I always think it's weird when the champions come out first You're going to understand why they come out first in just a second, but it's always weird. I always feel like the champion should go last. And so instead of Breezango's music, we hear a remix of Imperium's music, and it's Breezango standing like Imperium does with their hands behind their back. Fandango has a long-haired wig on. Tyler Breeze has his hair done up. They're both wearing the jumpers that Imperium wear. One of their jackets says Marsupial, the other says Fabio, and it flashes up the same way Imperium's does, except it's Emporium. So they came up with this whole entrance, made this song in the context of this story, and named themselves Emporium, just to make fun of Imperium. And that's just, that's so great. And the remix Emporium theme slaps. It's better. I think it's better. And so they're out. They're trying to play mind games, and Imperium don't seem super happy with copying their entrance for some reason. They jump them right before the bell rings. They're having this match. It's actually an excellent match. It's not terribly surprising, if you think about it. Tyler Breeze was straddled with a gimmick that was one of those gimmicks from the earlier days of NXT where they had gimmicks that worked really well for an NXT crowd, but there was no chance that it was going to work for a WWE crowd. The pretty boy gimmick where you come out with a selfie stick was going to be doomed to fail from day one on the main roster. It's not because of Tyler Breeze. He's an exceptional performer, but this is where we are. It's one of those gimmicks that the NXT crowd really, really appreciated, and the main roster crowd really, really didn't. Remember, people who watch main roster Raw and SmackDown often say that they don't watch NXT. That could be because it used to be a variety show or a competition show. It could be because they're just not interested. But point being, just because you're in NXT doesn't mean the main roster fans are immediately going to know you. And if they don't immediately know you, seeing a guy come out with a selfie stick with a crappy video of that selfie footage as your Titantron probably isn't going to endear you to an audience on day one. So his in-ring prowess didn't come through as strong on the main roster as it does for everybody. And so he was dead in the water and dead on arrival. Fandango had a stronger start. He debuted at WrestleMania. He debuted against Chris Jericho at WrestleMania and won. And he had the gimmick of basically a ballroom dancer. Fandango actually went and took ballroom dancing classes just to really get into the gimmick and do it the best he could. And for a while, it seemed like they were going to go with him. The main roster crowd loved Fandango for a bit. They loved his theme. It was the biggest theme in WWE at one point. And then everything kind of faded. Vince McMahon lost interest in his one-trick pony that he created. And so Fandango was kind of moved down. Then on the main roster, we end up with Breezango. The obvious and much better name of Fabrice they did not use, but we have Breezango. And they were presented as the fashion police. They were presented as comedy characters. They were excellent at it, but they were comedy characters, and then slowly but surely they stopped being used as much. So now here they are in NXT, and they're getting a chance to still be comedic and still be a funny tag team, but have excellent in-ring matches, which the main roster doesn't always have, and so that makes them feel more serious while they're in the ring. You can be a funny character. The New Day are funny goofball characters, but once they're in the ring, they're fairly serious. And now, Breezango is getting the chance to do that. And we're having this match, and it's excellent, and I really want Breezango to win because they're great. However, we have first Malcolm Bivens' team with him come out, and they're just staring at the guys in the ring. Shortly thereafter, Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch come out, and they attack Malcolm Bivens' team. Malcolm Bivens' team has a name, but it's one of those names that I hear differently every time I hear it, and I forgot to look it up right before I hit record, so we're just going to call him Team Bivens, because that's what we do here on the podcast, is I cover for lack of research by making something up real quick, and then you and I just act like that's what it's been the whole time. Cool? Cool. So we have a big brawl going out with the competitors that are not in the match. In the meantime, Fandango rolls up one of members of Imperium, but it's the wrong man, and then the legal man rolls up Fandango for the quick win. it was an interesting finish. It seemed like with the post-match, we had all the teams standing in the ring with Imperium with their tag titles, so I don't know if we're heading for a fatal four-way type deal or if we're going to have a number one contenders match again. Not sure, but we're definitely setting something up with all these teams. And it cuts to Tom Phillips, who's at the announce desk. Tom Phillips is the only announcer that's actually in the building. Mauro Ranallo and Beth Phoenix are recording, I assume, from their homes or from a recording studio over the video. And so Tom is just by himself, and he looks so alone. And he's about to do an interview with the Velveteen Dream. The Velveteen Dream is in the back on his couch that I always think it's very funny to picture him bringing into each building as he gets ready just in case he needs it. And so he's just dragging a couch behind him the whole time. It really takes away from the mystique when you think about him just dragging a couch into a corner. And Dream is talking, and Dexter Lumis pops up as he's talking behind him. He's looking at him, and he slowly has a piece of paper in his hand and puts it next to Dream on the sofa. And Dream finally notices it. And it's a picture of Dexter Lumis and the Velveteen Dream with the NXT tag titles on their shoulders. So the two drawings that Dexter Lumis has done, one was the Undisputed Era members in the back of a car tied up. Check, that one happened. The second one was the Velveteen Dream and him as tag team champions. So he's like a crazy psycho, but he likes friends too. You know? It's like, you guys judged him so hard for being crazy, but like, what if he just really wanted a friend, you know? You guys, that's your problem, is you don't think of people as people. And the Dream says that he got help from Lumis to take on the Disputed Era, and then he helped Lumis. That was a favor returned. This, the drawing, means nothing. The Dream is a solo act. The Dream should not be a solo act, because the Dream is ice cold right now. Lumis is so great, he's so great, and feels like Dream's going to regret that. That doesn't seem like the kind of dude that you want to be rude to if you can avoid it. He seems to take stuff kind of hard. We cut from that to a vignette of Santos Escobar, which is apparently still just going to be his name for some reason. And we cut from that, and it says we're doing a vignette for Timothy Thatcher again. Thatcher's in a ring with some trainees for Thatcher's Thatch Can style of wrestling. I just realized that that's hard to say, but it's hilarious, and I'm so glad that they came up with it. He shows the Fujiwara armbar on one of the trainees, and he's stretching the trainees. He says, if you pull this far, it feels like that's as far as you can go. But if I reset my stance and pull up, and the guy's tapping and screaming. And then he goes to a double wrist lock. He does the same thing. He stretches another guy. He has the guys line up, and he says, this is only the first day. Next time, the real work begins. And clean up my ring and get out of here. You crying all over my ring. This is great. This makes Thatcher look like a madman, makes him look like a jerk, makes him look like a bad guy. But it also shows some comedic chops, because he's just being such a straight man about being a jerk to these guys. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. And then Bobby Fish and Adam Cole are in their limo before the show. And they're basically saying that we need to help Roddy and we need to keep it in-house. And then Roderick Strong gets in the limo. He's disheveled. And they take Strong to a therapist's office and have him sit on the couch and close his eyes. They said, we found the best doctor. The doctor is Kyle O'Reilly, wearing a disguise, which is just kind of a hat, a tweed jacket, and a glasses. And he's doing a voice.
And he's just doing this. He basically talks like something to the effect of this the whole time.
Got it. Cool. Strong says that he keeps seeing Lumis staring at him, and he says, I hate when people stare at me. You know that. They show him some ink blots. The first one, he says, big muscles. Second one, he says, Lumis. They say, no, it's not. He says, yes, it is. Third one, he says, flip it around. He says, that's the trunk that I was in. The therapist says that, Strong, I think that you need to face your fears and face the trunk. and they get pumped up to do it, and they go back out to the limo, and Strong says, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I can't do it. No, I'm going to do it. And he puts one leg in the limo, quickly gets out, and just starts running down the street away from them. Adam Cole yells, you get back here and get in this trunk. Says, other than him running away screaming, I think that went pretty well. And then they have to yell at the driver to go around and pick him up because Strong is still running down the street. This is good twofold. This is funny, obviously, but it also puts over that Mandex and Loomis put them in the trunk of a car for like 12 hours. And that's really scary. And if you're going to have a character like Dexter Loomis, you absolutely can. However, he needs to affect people. If he's going to torment people and play psychological games with them and kidnap them or do bad things to them, then it needs to affect the people he does it to. Otherwise, there's no point. In this case, Fish got over it fairly quickly. If both of them got over it quickly, that wouldn't be good. That would just make Loomis's whole thing feel like not a big deal at all. The fact that it's still bothering Roderick Strong and he can't get over it and can't face the trunk at all, it is funny. Yes, it is very funny. However, it makes Dexter Loomis feel more threatening than he already does. Loomis can only be so threatening by himself. You need his victims to show it for you. That's one of the reasons The Fiend is such a great character. Yes, it is Bray Wyatt and the work that he's done with it, but it's also the fact that Seth Rollins changed after facing him, Daniel Bryan changed, The Miz changed, everybody that he has faced has changed in one way or the other. It has to affect the person you're doing it to for it to really have the impact that I think you're going to want for it. But this was a great segment. They cut to the back, and Adam Cole's now being interviewed. He's in the back. He's looking at that hourglass that was put in the ring last week. Apparently, he picked it up, brought it backstage. The sands of time are still going through. And before he can really say much, Keith Lee is behind him. And Keith Lee walks up, and he interrupts him. Keith Lee says, your time with that title is quite limited indeed. Do you guys get it? He says limitless, and then he says the title's limited. Got it? Okay. But it's not going to be Cross who takes that title from you. It's going to be me. And then he picks up the hourglass and throws it to the floor, breaking it. I wouldn't do that, Keith Lee. They're going to see this TV show and know it was you. Don't be stupid. Lee says, tick-tock, as we fade out. Now Adam Cole's out to the ring. And it made me think of the comments that Road Dogg made on Corey Graves' podcast, I believe, a while back, where he said that if Adam Cole were the size of Karrion Kross, he would already be undisputed champ. And that really did strike me, that he's excellent on the mic, he's excellent in the ring, he feels like a big deal, he feels like somebody who should be a champion, but if he ever goes to the main roster, I don't know that he's going to get that chance. There's always the outside chance that you'll have something of a Daniel Bryan situation where the fans just won't be denied, but right now there are no fans to deny or not. And you're going to need some Herculean effort like that, because I think Adam Cole is always going to be a small guy in Vince's mind, and he's very hesitant to give small guys a chance rather than big guys. I think it's weird that in 2020 we're still going by that rather than who's the most talented, but here we are. And so Adam Cole is fantastic in NXT, but he's one of those guys that I really worry about if he goes to the main roster. But Adam Cole's out. He says, it's been 381 days since I have been NXT champion. He says, I am the hardest working and greatest champ in this business. Starts running down Cross. He says, you were very impressive at TakeOver. You took out Ciampa, who was the heart of NXT. But guess what? I've been there, done that. You've been here, what, 5 minutes? You've got a long way to go before you earn a shot at this title. This is Keith Lee. He says that he has his eye on the North American championship. He said, maybe I want two championships on my shoulders. At which point, Keith Lee's music hits. Keith Lee's out here just straight rocking sweatpants. He's wearing his merch, which is in pink writing, and then pink shoes, and then sweatpants, just gray sweatpants. He looks real comfy. It looks like he was taking a nap, and then they woke him up because they needed him to do a thing. Before Keith Lee even gets a chance to speak, Johnny Gargano comes out. Johnny says, I pinned Keith Lee last week. I'm coming after that North American Championship. At which point, somebody in the crowd yells, you ruined everything, Johnny! Great audience participation. Johnny says, but why stop there? Candice and I are going to be the first couple to be NXT and NXT Women's Champion at the same time. Keith Lee and Johnny Gargano were talking about the spot where Johnny DDT'd Keith Lee onto Candice last week. Keith Lee says, as I picked her up with damn near a tear running down my eye, I heard Candice whisper, thank you, Mr. Limitless. That's the most action I've had in a while. Johnny says, that didn't happen. I was there, that didn't happen. Stop being weird. Johnny, as always, is fantastic. Finn Balor then interrupts. It's at this point where I wrote that NXT doesn't do segments like this very much. This feels like a Monday Night Raw segment where you just have people coming out and interrupting other people to set up something for a title match. It's odd because it's kind of a played out thing that WWE does, but NXT doesn't generally do it. But I feel like the ends justify the means here, at least. And so Finn Balor says that he doesn't wait in lines. He cuts right to the front. He said, this isn't a challenge. This is a warning to Keith Lee. He says, when I win, I'm coming right for you, Adam Cole. Calls him a transitional champ. Adam Cole says, transitional? I'm the one that beat your record. At which point, William Regal interrupts on the Titantron. He says he loves all this. He says, given him an idea where everybody wins. It'll be Keith Lee defending the North American title against Johnny Gargano and Finn Balor in a triple threat. Now, whoever wins that match will be the North American champion. And then on July 8th, the North American champion will fight Adam Cole. The winner of that match, winner takes all. So somebody is going to be NXT champion and North American champion. Awesome. That triple threat's going to be great. And whoever faces Adam Cole is going to be great. There's not a wrong choice of those three. I would like it to be Keith Lee, but Finn Balor would be just fine, and that would be great with Johnny, too. So I agree with Regal. Everybody kind of wins. And then Keith Lee's in the back being interviewed, and he's interrupted by Candice, who's yelling at him. Keith Lee just smiles. Candice slowly turns around, and Mia Yim attacks her. It's at this point that I heard one of the announcers call them Team Yimitless again, and I hate it so much. Hate it so much, guys. That's just a thing they're gonna do. I was hoping they would forget about it. Guys, they didn't forget about it. Great. And then we have Scarlett, really just kind of from the lower waist down, kind of walking up to the broken hourglass that's on the floor. And she bends down and picks up some of the sand and lets it slip through her fingers. And then from the left side of the screen, we see presumably Karrion Kross's foot. And he walks in, you just see his shoe, and smashes a piece of glass. So that doesn't seem great. That doesn't seem ideal, necessarily. And then we have Bronson Reed's entrance. They show a clip of 3 weeks ago, where after Bronson Reed's match, Karrion Kross attacked him. He was trying to intimidate Ciampa before their takeover match. That seemed to have worked excellently, because he beat him real, real bad. And then Leon Ruff is out next, who is the NXT resident enhancement talent. He's gone against Ciampa and Cross and just really kind of everybody. Bronson Reed is over 300 pounds. Ruff is about 157, so Bronson Reed is almost 200 pounds heavier than Leon Ruff. If that gives you any indication what kind of match that we're about to have. Bronson Reed immediately flattens Leon Ruff. So at this point I wrote Leon Ruff is a great seller. So that's good. He's gotten to display that a lot. And basically, Bronson Reed hits a senton on the mat and then goes up to the top rope and hits a splash from the top rope to win. So Leon Ruff is 0-1,000,000. And Bronson Reed got a few moves in. I don't know that it was an enhancement match so much as just a setup so that he could call out Karrion Kross. But he grabs a mic and he says, Bronson Reed isn't one to forget. That's why I'm going to do what no one else has. Kross, I am calling you out for next week. All right. So Karrion Kross is going to beat up Bronson Reed next week. Later in the show, they say that Karrion Kross accepted the challenge, so next week it will be Bronson Reed and Karrion Kross beating up Bronson Reed. We have Santos Escobar out in a suit with his two heavies. Phantasma was known as the best lucha libre artist ever, he says. He says, when you wear a mask, that's all the world sees. There's a luchador in a mask. He says, for 20 years, that was me. So then I earned the opportunity to come to NXT. I knew the book on Phantasma would come to an end. My dad always said I was going to be a leader. I am the leader of leaders. And together, we are going to leave a legacy. This is interesting because he kept the name Phantasma initially in NXT and only spoke Spanish initially. So I guess it's a guy that had to be Phantasma to get in NXT. And then immediately after getting in and winning the Cruiserweight title, he went to Santos Escobar, which is such a bad name. But now he speaks English very fluently, does not wear a mask, and his name, again, is Santos Escobar. I keep repeating it because I don't feel like you guys are reacting as strongly as you need to the fact that this dude's name is Santos Escobar. It's so bad. All right, that's fine. You know what? It's fine. We're not even going to worry about it. Drake Maverick's music hits, and he says, congratulations, you fooled everyone. They always said, Drake, you've got more guts than brains, my friend. And they might be right. He runs into the ring, and he's attacking all three of them. And he gets a few shots in on the goons and a couple on Phantasma, hits a dive onto Phantasma. Eventually, the numbers game takes him out. And they're over by where it seems like the announce table would be, but now it's just kind of a table with a couple laptops or something on it, and they move all that. The goons bring Drake up to the platform that Santos Escobar, remember how it's saying, okay, just making sure you guys still remembered his bad name, where Santos Escobar is standing, and he puts Drake on his shoulders and hits the Phantom Driver from that platform through the table onto the floor. That looked like it hurt real bad for Drake Maverick and hurt real worse for Santos Escobar, who basically just took a fall onto the back of his legs and his butt onto what looked like a very hard floor. And that just looked like it sucked for everybody involved with it. It seemed fine. I mean, they went through a table, so I guess something slowed them a little bit. But I don't imagine there's a way to do that where it doesn't suck. And so we go out with Santos holding the Cruiserweight title with his two heavies over the fallen body of Drake Maverick. And then when we come back, it says that during the break, Drake was being taken to an ambulance on a stretcher. Of course, he was being taken to a local medical facility because in WWE, hospitals aren't a thing. And next we have our main event. Shotzi Blackheart is out first. This has been a cool journey with Shotzi. She was a nothing character at first, and then she got a shining moment in, I believe it was a battle royal, where she eliminated Shayna Baszler. And then from there, she just kept getting small opportunities that she made the most of. And now she's in a team with Tegan Nox going after the women's tag titles, and she's really carved out a lane for herself that I don't think was supposed to be there initially. I always love those stories in wrestling where they're not expecting anything from somebody, and they just hit everything out of the park and make the most of every chance that they're given, and then they're just undeniable, and that's exactly what Shotzi's become, because there's no way you can tell me they initially thought that they were going to have to bring a mini tank, because that's how Shotzi comes to the ring now. That's so great. That's cooler than Rusev's regular tank. Can you imagine just having a mini tank? Like, that ramp is short, but you don't even feel like walking it, so you just jump in your mini tank? That's awesome. Shotzi's awesome. Tegan Nox is out next. Tegan Nox has had an interesting path here as well. She was on kind of a line to being a big star, and then she got a bad knee injury. And then that was starting to heal up. They weren't really doing anything with her. They were just putting her with Dakota Kai occasionally and Team Kick. And then Dakota Kai turns heel on her and gets a huge reaction at the moment, but then it feels like it kind of fizzled out. And so Tegan Nox has just kind of been bouncing around. I like Tegan Nox a lot. I'm very glad that her and Shotzi are together in this tag team. And then what amounts to a thrown-together tag team of Tegan and Shotzi have built up to such a point that Bayley and Sasha are returning to NXT for the first time in 5 years to put the titles on the line against them. And throughout the course of this match, I really wanted them to win. And then we have Bayley and Sasha coming back. It's very cool to see Sasha making an entrance in NXT again, and it's very cool to see Bayley doing it as well. Obviously, they were both huge in NXT. Sasha goes to the main roster. She feuds with Charlotte Flair, where they swip-swap the belt back and forth and back and forth. It was bad. And then Becky Lynch came along and took a lot of what I think Sasha was going to do. And so she was kind of relegated to being Bayley's lackey, hopefully eventually to set up a match between the two. But I don't know. It was supposed to be a match between them years ago, and it didn't happen. We keep doing this will-they-won't-they thing. Then Bayley, who was a consummate face, she was just a fan that became a wrestler, finally turns heel. It's one of those things where it's somebody that you don't think would be good as a heel, who's actually much better as a heel, gets to show more of their personality than you thought that they had in them. And so Bayley is that person now. As they're walking around the ring, Bayley's looking at the people behind the hockey barriers, yelling, "You're welcome for your jobs," which is just great. When she's in the ring with Tegan Nox, she's hitting her and be like, "Respect me! Respect me!" Because Bayley's the best. Heel Bayley's the best. It's a short match. It's good, but it's short. There's interference by Bayley, and Sasha makes Shotzi tap out to the bank statement. And Sasha and Bayley are celebrating with the tag titles. They're saying, "This is our NXT. We did this. This is our NXT. And Io Shirai apparently takes issue with that, because she comes out, she takes out Bayley and Sasha, attacks them. They bail out of the ring. Io Shirai holds up her NXT title and says, "This is my NXT." As Bayley and Sasha are slowly walking away, they have a referee grab their tag titles. I like that Io doesn't like the idea of it being anybody's NXT but her. She didn't necessarily do that for Tegan and Shotzi. She just didn't like somebody else laying claim to what she feels is hers. And if you think it's not my NXT, I'ma kick you till you think it is. I like that. I don't know that they were setting up a match with it, because Io doesn't have a partner. It doesn't need the tag titles. But it was just cool to have Io kind of step up and be like, no. My NXT. Thank you kindly. She's lifting her NXT title, staring them down, and that's how we fade out right before they tell us that it's going to be Cameron Grimes in action next week. And then we are going to have Bronson Reed and Karrion Kross. I mean, it's going to be another squash match for Karrion Kross, but I imagine we'll get more clarification on who he's targeting. Could be still be Adam Cole. Could be Keith Lee, because he broke the hourglass. Could really be anybody. I don't know. He's a kind of an unstable dude, and he just kind of does what he wants. Feels like we're going to do that NXT North American title match, then the NXT title match, and then Karrion Kross is going to go up against whoever wins that, although it doesn't seem like the kind of character Karrion Kross where he would just sit around and wait for a title shot. But I don't know. Maybe he's a real patient monster. He could be. You guys don't know. Since your problem is you don't see the people in people, you know? But with that said, that means my time here is almost up. Like I said, good episode of NXT this week. We had a lot of interesting action. Something that was cut out of the Hulu cut, Aaliyah, what a match, because Robert Stone unknowingly helped her. Apparently in the intervening time between Chelsea Green firing him, he's been disheveled. He's been wearing the same suit, just unbuttoned, looking slovenly. And he was drinking and accidentally threw up in the ring, which caused a distraction, and Aaliyah won. So it looks like Robert Stone's got another client. I would suggest you go and check out his Twitter, because since getting fired by Chelsea Green, he's been tweeting about being sad, saying he's fine when he's clearly not. He had Matt Morgan do a video calling him a jerk. he's basically reached out to wrestlers to try and have them promote the Robert Stone brand, and everybody has been like, no, you're actually kind of a jerk. It's a hilarious Twitter timeline from the point after Chelsea Green fires him, where he's trying to get Chelsea Green's new cell number and responding to all of her tweets. Again, I would recommend it. The other Twitter feed I would recommend is mine. It's ZachNXT, ZachNXT. We're always having a great time over there. We're talking about wrestling as it's happening, as well as just random thoughts that pop into our heads. If you have any questions or comments or concerns, you want to tell me I'm great, you want to tell me I'm suck, that's the best way to do it. Again, ZachNXT on Twitter. Otherwise, that is going to be it for me for this week's NXT. I want to thank you for listening. I've been Zachary Smith. You've been great.